Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel and SI's Pat Forte. Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Hi, welcome to the pod, emergency pod number two of the week. First week of
total
August.
Pod number four, right, of the week?
Oh, man. Emergency. College football is on fire. Just Pat Forte and I. Ross Dellinger is hosting a bachelor party and is currently floating down the San Marcos River in the middle of Texas. He did not stop him from helping report conference realignment, including sending a tweet at one point out with some breaking news, a little breaking news, while riding on a pedal bar in Austin.
Now that's a pod hero right there.
Really is. They don't teach that one in journalism school, kids. They don't teach that one in journalism school. Anyway, here we are. Oregon, Washington are headed to the Big Ten, which will have 18 teams, four of them on the West Coast. If he had said this, 2 years ago, let alone a month ago, would not have made a lot of sense, or at least a year ago and before USC, USCLA. But here we are. The Pac-12 founded, traces its roots back to 1915 in a whole bunch of trouble. I don't know if it exists. I don't know if it gobbles up the Mountain West or the Mountain West gobbles it up. I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. Arizona expected to go to the Big 12 at this typing. Have they said they're going? What are we doing, Pat? Do we have anything?
Nothing I have official. Not heard anything formal or official. People in those two leagues have gone deep underground. And then Arizona, if Arizona goes, does Arizona State and Utah follow? And we are left with absolute scrap iron in what's left of the Pac-12.
The power, Pac-4. The Pac-4 of, yes, Washington Pac-4. State, Oregon State, Cal, and Stanford. What a crew. A complete Armageddon. I mean, it is just flat-out Armageddon. Not since Big East football have we seen one league die. I don't know. It's all alarm fire going on. We got a ton of tentacles here. We're going to try to get through all of it. I want to start with this. We are not going to turn this into a screaming at clouds. This isn't fair. This isn't how, because this is what's happening. This is how it works. We're going to move forward. But for a moment, because it is a lot of people I've heard from that are like, I'm kind of sad, or this is hitting me a little like different than I thought. Like, what the hell is going on? What do you say to those that are like, what the hell happened to my sport of college football, Pat?
TV happened. If you ever saw the 1976 Academy Award winning movie Network, Howard Beale is the last words of the, after he's been assassinated, the last words of the show are believed to be the first man ever killed because of lousy ratings. Well, the Pac-12 has just been killed because of lousy ratings, because they couldn't get a TV deal, because they couldn't figure out how to continue their niche as a prime money source for their members. But this is where we are. This is media rights driving every decision and leading to conferences, you know, backstabbing each other. And so that's what's happened here. The Pac-12 showed weakness, and here came the Predators to come and get their top schools, their top market draws away from them. And that's what happened. TV drives everything, and TV just drove the Pac-12 off a cliff and into the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah. There's like a panic, right? It's all panic. The Big Ten, to me, the SEC is living rent-free, and it's the only thing free in the Big Ten, but it's living rent-free in the Big Ten's head. And this was a reaction to them. And there was a video on Thursday that came out of, and this isn't an A to B line, but you can kind of draw it, because this isn't really about the need for more money. All these schools have enough money to play college football. It's the need to spend more money than the other guy is spending money to play college football. So it's gold plated everything. It's everything over the top, wasting money and then going, we need more money. And you go, well, maybe, you know, if you didn't have a, you know, it's a household that has like four Lamborghinis, and you go, well, maybe if you just cut back to one Lamborghini, you wouldn't be so desperate for money and you need to go rob another bank or something. There was a video of Michigan State and their new football locker room. And I don't mean to single out Michigan State because they are no different than everybody else. And the locker room was donated by Matt Ishbia, their billionaire alum. But it is this unbelievable locker room. Like, it's a spaceship. It's millions upon millions. And Mel Tucker, who's got a $100 million, $95 million contract, is opening the door. And this isn't even really a team that's like, what are they going to, like, they didn't, the old locker room was all right. And, but it's like, well, we need this new locker room. And then it's like, well, we need more money. Like, everything is just spend, 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 spend. And then they got to squeeze more pennies out instead of saying, we got enough, we're good. And so the Big Ten that was already going to 16 teams, that was already sitting there with the richest television contract of them all, that has three networks to show their games, that sells so many tickets, sat there and said, you know what? We need two more. We're going to grab Washington and Oregon, not even because they're going to bring us much more money in this deal. They may not make any more money. There's cost. It's probably going to break even. Fox may be paying a lot of the travel costs, all different stuff that they're still working out. But simply because we don't want to risk anyone else getting these two, and we can get them at a discount right now. So they're like a depressed asset because we completely destabilized the neighborhood by taking USC and UCLA. And it's just cutthroat capitalism and saying, we're just going to get them because we might need them. And you're like, you don't need anything. If Michigan State's locker room is that nice, you don't need them. But it's a panic. It's just a grab. And it's like all collegiality, all sense of like just perspective is just gone. It's just kind of a weird thing to watch these schools act that way and literally be like, yeah, let's have an 18-team conference.
18 teams. Think about that. Do you remember? I mean, it was not that long ago, certainly well within our lifetime, that the SEC went to 12 and people were like, whoa, that 12 is a lot. But they figured out how to make it work. Then all of a sudden it's 14. Then it's 16. Now it's 18. You're going to be playing plenty of games on Thursday nights and Friday nights, which will also help with the academic pursuits of the athletes as they're traveling across the country. You're going to be playing at all kinds of hours on Saturdays. You're going to have schools grumbling about having to go play at 10:30 p.m. on the West Coast. But that's the deal. That's what it is. And yes, to your point, this is a sport, this is an entity, an enterprise, an industry in need of financial restraint and responsibility, and they have gone the other way. Instead of cutting back, it's like, well, we'll just make more money. It is like, we are not going to start saving anything. We're just going to spend more, and this is ways to do that. And yeah, there is no doubt that the SEC, which, you know, and everybody says whatever they want, you know, but that they are not sitting there like right now ready to pounce and add schools. But the Big Ten's like, oh my gosh, just in case when they do, we've got to go to 18. Do you really? Does Oregon and Washington really help you? What does that do for you other than add major complications and give you more scheduling issues and more bloat and more travel? It's astounding to me that these are smart people that lead institutions and they have been absolutely bullied into a line by television networks, and they have sold their fans and sold their athletes down the river on account of absolute just empire building for the point of what exactly? I don't know.
And I can say that this was TV driven. This was conference office driven. It's like assembling risk pieces for the future. You know, that game Risk, you like grab like little areas of the world.
Yeah.
It's probably a much more modern, I haven't played Risk in, I don't know when, but there's probably a modern video game version of such a thing. Be more apt. But anyway, a lot. So late Thursday night, and we'll get to the kind of the TikTok of how this all worked. It is a wild TikTok. There was a lot of pushback from athletic directors and coaches who were saying, what are they bringing to the table? It's nothing against Oregon and Washington. They're good pro, really good programs, and they're really good markets. And Portland, and no one's saying like this is useless, but why? This is only making our lives more complicated. This is only adding more stress to the thing. Are we getting more money, TV money? Not even. So it's like, what are we doing, and why do we have to do it now? Like, if the Big Ten, if the NFL wants to expand and go from 32 teams to 34, they spend like 5 years examining the markets and the potential ownership groups and all the facilities and everything. These guys are making a decision on like three conference calls amidst other busy work. Like, they had a conference call, a presidential conference call at 1 a.m. Eastern Thursday night. Like mid, you know, middle of the night, we're like, ah, should we get them? Should we not? Like, this is what you're making this decision. And, you know, it's just, it was crazy, but there is a lot of people at the Big Ten, and including some major schools, that are like, we don't want this.
Yeah.
Not now. Why? They're not going anywhere. Let's get them later. And instead, it's like, now we got to grab them now because we can get these assets. And it's like, assets, I got to get my field hockey team to Eugene, Oregon. Yeah. How, yeah. Like, what? Yeah. What are we getting?
Yeah. I got on, I'm trying to remember what, some point this summer when they, on the Big Ten Network deal where they announced the football schedules for 2024 and 2025, which will now be radically redone on the fly in the last minute. But one of the things they were, the Big Ten was congratulating itself because the schools from the Midwest only had to make one trip to the West Coast
right.
per season. Well, guess what? That's out the window now. You're making two, almost all of you. And of course, once again, the schools on the West Coast will be making four, five trips to the Midwest and the East. So they have absolutely complicated their own lives and in pursuit of exactly what. And if you're Oregon and Washington, when in a viable Pac-12 that had an automatic qualifying bid to the playoff, a 12-team playoff, it's sitting right there for you. And guess what? Now it's not. Welcome to 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th place on the totem pole. Good luck.
All right. So what happened here? This was a wild week. And Thursday night and Friday morning were particularly wild. At one point, I had a story written, a draft of a story of the zombie Pac-12. From the ashes, the Conference of Champions rises, right? Someone do a welfare check for Bill Walton. He's probably out back self-medicating, I hope. We love you, Bill.
Can't blame him.
Can't blame him. But, like, this thing almost came back. What is your you and I have not discussed this, because we'll see if our stories match up. Because it was wild. Like, it was like, it's done. They're coming. Then it was, Oregon and Washington are coming. Arizona, everything's staying. Then it was, they're coming again. It was a total boomerang. And what happened between Thursday night at whatever, the middle of the night, and the middle of the day on Friday, Pat?
Well, this will be interesting to compare notes. Because we're going to find out. I went to bed at like 12:05 a.m., after Washington went executive session, been a long day, rest up, know there's a big day on Friday. Wake up and start making some calls and putting out some texts, and everybody's like, hey, because the tenor of everything I was sending out was, okay, so is this done? What time is this happening? And then it was like, well, it's maybe not done. It's maybe not happening. Pac-12 pulling the rally of all rallies here based on a couple of things that I was told. Some reticence for the Pac-12 schools to be the bad guy, to be the one with their blood on their hands of killing off a 108-year-old league. Some pushback from Big Ten schools, prominent Big Ten schools, that are like, we really don't want to play these guys on a regular basis. We don't really want them adding to the clutter of the league and the difficulty of just logistics. And then the third thing was an ACC life raft of sorts to the Pac-12 of potential scheduling and or even greater agreements between the two that could add money to both of them, because both of them are looking for revenue, right? And that all of a sudden was bringing everybody back to the table from the Pac-12, and the Pac-12 was ready to go into a meeting at, I don't know what time it was, 10 a.m. maybe Eastern, maybe 11. And the feeling was cautious optimism that this, they had stopped the train, turned it around, and were ready to actually strike a deal that would keep the league intact.
Very similar to what I heard. There was this Hail Mary, rumors of rumor, we're just going to throw them out there. I mean, what the heck? Rumors of like this Hail Mary, the ACC and Pac-12 are going to bring the alliance back. And somehow, by it was actually pretty smart. If you group all these 20-something teams together, can you get more money? And whatever, I was like, that to me, it was like, I think it's 25 teams. I'm like, you're not going to get this to work. There's too many teams. It's like too many moving parts. And this is the thing, like, everyone's trying to do this in like a half an hour. But there was something like that. Then there was like, is there a scheduling deal that we get, you know, whatever. Then we get the late night and, you know, who knows what, and they'll not, probably none of them will ever admit it now. Did Oregon and Washington particularly sit there, Oregon particularly say, we don't want to go? Did the Big Ten start saying, we don't want to take you? Whatever it was like two people went out on a date and neither one wanted the second date. And no one's really sure who really's, I wasn't going to go anyway. That cooled. And there was a belief inside the Pac-12 that Oregon, they weren't going anywhere. And they walk into the grant of rights meeting and there is some hope like, holy cow, we're going to get everyone to sign this thing. And then Oregon said, we're going the Big Ten. And then they reconvene the Big Ten meeting at like 11. And what was once dead early in the morning, because of that pushback, all of a sudden it was like, all right. And some of it's just the weird stuff of like, I don't know, like it's the saturation reporting and there's so many leaks and there's so many people.
Right.
It's sort of like you sit down to a restaurant and you're like, yeah, I think I'll have the chicken. No, I think I'll have the pasta. And then I'll go back to the chicken, right? And so it's like people are like, oh, this was a huge – sometimes it's just like that, right? I was declaring it like win probability. It was like reporting on a win probability chart. 80% chance they're going to win. Oh, pick six. 80% chance they're going to lose. Oh, return kickoff. You know, so you're like, I don't know. What the hell's going on? No one does. But boom, all of a sudden they're back, and then bang, Big Ten closes the deal. At this moment, we don't know exactly how much of a cut Oregon and Washington are taking. I know I have heard the Fox is going to be involved in trying to help with travel costs and things like that. Who knows? All of it breaking out. But whatever it was, it went truly win probability chart. And if I am one of these schools in the Pac-12 that's going to get left behind, like, good. I mean, if I'm an AD in one of those schools, man, break out the good bourbon tonight because you deserve it. This is just a roller coaster of life and death financially for these schools. I don't even know how you do it because it was like, we're dead. Oh my God, we're back. We're dead.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. I mean, it was just shocking. Like, I was so surprised when I started talking to people before that Pac-12 meeting, and there was like some giddiness, like, oh my gosh, we're really going to pull this off. And then very quickly after, like within an hour, it's like, no, we're not. And, you know, I don't know. What do you think that Oregon was negotiating publicly to a degree with the Big Ten? Like, hey, we're willing to go back in this meeting and go.
Who was bluffing?
Unless you come through with something, you know?
Yeah, but I think the Big Ten, it's hard to say, like, what's the big, like, there's so many players in this. And there was a sense like, all right, whatever. Okay. Yeah. Like, this isn't desperation for the Big Ten.
No.
Literally nothing will change day to day. It's like, oh, we got to go to Portland. We got to fly out to Portland, drive over to Eugene. We got to go to Seattle. It's just not a big deal. And it's a big deal for everyone else. And even the Big 12 was hearing, and they were like, oh my God, they were doomed. We're not going to get Arizona. Yeah, what do we do with this 14th spot? All of a sudden that was like stuff was just flying. It was the wildest.
Crazy.
We say this all the time, but what a dumbass sport to run this way. These are $100 million decisions. And people are like, oh God, it's like a craps table.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, snake eyes, please.
Like, hour to hour, like, yeah, maybe we're staying. Ah, maybe we're going. At some point in there, well, that was going on, and it looked like the Big 12 might all of a sudden crap out, you know, and be stuck without a 14th team. Danny Hurley tweets Dane O'Neill's Big East book. It's like, yeah, this is where we want to be. And I was
oh,
like,
my goodness.
Big East. It's like, we ain't going to no Big 12. It's like, I mean, it's just like the subliminal stuff that was going on was just, it was preposterous. I mean, look, we've had a lot of absurd days in the realignment space, but this today might be the most ridiculous.
Absolutely nuts. All right, let's go through this. Winners and losers of realignment, okay?
Yes.
Let me just ask it this way. Is this good for the Big Ten? How is it good and how could it be bad for the Big Ten?
Well, I mean, it's marginally good if you think that the SEC is inevitably going to pick up other schools and you need to as well. That's the only reason I think it's good. I think it is mostly additional headaches, additional problems. I don't see it as being any, you know, great advancement for the Big Ten, and I'm still not 100% sure why they wanted it.
Okay. Agreed. I mean, it gives you a couple more good to really good brands for games. We've talked in the past, you know, they have a deal. They have a Fox national game, a CBS national game, and an NBC national game every week. And you take a look at a weekly schedule and you say, what's the third best game? And it's really quickly like Iowa, Minnesota. And you go, boy, is that really a national, like a big national game? Just take a look at, go pick a random week. So that's why they added USC and UCLA, and that's why they're adding this. So for the television partners or for Big Ten fans, there's one more, you know, Oregon playing people, Washington playing people. It's better than not. One thing about the Big Ten, it's got a lot of dead weight. There's a lot of there's just a lot of shrapnel. What did flotsam and jetsam?
Flotsam and jetsam.
Pete used to call it. Yeah. And by the way, a lot of the flotsam and jetsam is from past realignments. I mean, it's Rutgers.
Who are you talking about? Yeah.
Okay. They added, and this is why, and this is the potential downside. Can Oregon and Washington be good in this league? And you say, well, they should be, but it doesn't always work out. We've talked about it a lot of times, right? It doesn't always work out. Sometimes you have to be in one situation that it works. And you go to another situation, it doesn't work. They added Rutgers and Maryland for the short-term money of, we need basic cable subscriptions in homes in New Jersey and Maryland, and it'll basically, you know, pump more money through the Big Ten network. And now they're stuck with Maryland and Rutgers that have never really fit. Half the Maryland fans still wish they're in the ACC. The games aren't good. You know, I mean, you know, Maryland's done okay, but it's not, this is not a net positive in terms of big brands. It was a money grab, and it looks like a money grab. They added Nebraska because they thought they were getting another national powerhouse, absolute national contender to go with Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State. We're grabbing a big old, and guess what? Was it 7 straight losing seasons or something? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, they've been terrible.
They're terrible.
Not bad, but terrible.
Right. Brought nothing to the table competitively. And if you had sat there and said, hey, Nebraska to the Big Ten is going to end up terrible, you'd be like, no way. Now, maybe Matt Rhule can get it going. Who knows? Okay. It's still some, there's still something there, but sometimes you just have to be in the other spot. And that's the risk here. You sit there right now and go, hey, you added Oregon. Hey, man, you added Washington. They're pretty good. Washington was the last Pac-12 team in a playoff. Oregon's a big national brand. People like them. The uniform, Phil Knight, all this stuff. You know, Phil Knight's like 80. You know, like, I mean, I don't know how old he is. Phil, you know, and you're like, sometimes it doesn't work. Most teams, other than the our Yahoo Sports newsletter did this. They went through teams that moved from one Power Five to another, how many have been successful? And there were none.
None.
Like Texas A&M is like, they had like that 1-9 win season. They had Johnny Football. Like it just isn't there. Like these schools don't go. So you sit there and go, oh man, I don't know. We'll have to see. That's the risk. All right. Is this good for Oregon?
I don't know. I mean, I would at least say TBD that, you know, that they do have enough brand power that they can at least compete. Whether they can succeed, I don't know. I still think if you want to go to the college football playoff, there was a heck of a lot easier way staying in the Pac-12 than going into an 18-team league and playing a lot of really far road games and taking on a significantly harder schedule than you had. So I'm going to say it could potentially be good, but right now, no.
I don't know. So I'm you know, they were staring at an Apple TV deal and $20 million or 20 something million bucks. So can you continue to spend? Well, there's Phil Knight, but again, for how long? Like, do you have to take the Big Ten lifeline and have to jump to the Big Ten? It's hard to say. Like, look, has this worked out for Rutgers? They have more money. They never win anything anymore. So I don't know if it really did. Right. But, competitively, I think Oregon has a chance to be able to compete. You know, they have a great fan base. They have a great brand. Can they, you know, having UCLA and USC really helps, hopefully, them maintain those recruiting ties in Southern California. They've gotten so many good players. They've always recruited nationally. Like, getting players has always been the challenge. I think it's probably good. But I agree, because I agree, the far easier thing was to go 11-1 every year and maybe make the college football playoff right where you're at. Could you do that at $25 million a year? Probably. I don't think that was going to be that big of a deal. But, you know, I don't know. We will see. Is this assessment, we don't have to repeat ourselves, is this assessment any different for Washington? Or same thing?
Largely the same thing. You know, the only thing there, well, they've actually got a bigger fan base, I believe. I mean, they got a bigger stadium than Oregon does.
Bigger school.
And bigger school, bigger city in Seattle.
Yeah.
But their brand isn't quite what Oregon's brand is, you know, in terms of recognition and recruiting juice and that sort of thing. And they've been, you know, very much up and down. They've had some great periods, but they've had some really bad periods too. You know, does this give them some level of exposure and credibility that they didn't maybe have? Yeah, maybe so. But again, also with that comes the degree of difficulty.
Oregon only has 18,000 undergrads. 18,600 in fall of 2021. I don't know. Is that the second smallest in the league now?
Behind Northwestern?
Yeah.
It could be.
I mean, you're looking at schools in the Big Ten with 50, 60,000. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, 18,000 is a small bit. I don't know how much that matters, but it's like in every way, it's a public institution, but you're walking in with the big dogs. Is it easier to get the third playoff bid out of the Big Ten than win the Pac-12? Is kind of what, you know, I mean, it's a hard road. Yeah. It's just a hard road. Ohio State and Michigan are virtually immovable.
Right.
And Penn State ain't too easy to move around either. And Wisconsin, you know, it's just.
And USC's, you know, coming in.
Yeah. Although I do like USC tried to get away from their Oregon problem. And Oregon
and Oregon following them
turned up like a bad penny or something like that. This, right? Like
this is the Texas A&M Texas dynamic.
Yeah,
Texas A&M. Yeah, we've left them behind. We're going to the SEC. Oh, wait a minute.
I'm sick of these Oregon people. Oh, you're back. Wait, what? You're coming too? Like, yeah, we just got deferred admission, but we got in off the wait list. Big Ten wait listed us, but here we are, and we're your roommate. Good to see you guys. Oh, man. All right. The Big 12. We'll get to the I don't know if there's any winners in the left thing, but the Big 12. Big 12. Should we expect, as I do, it'll end up Arizona, Arizona State, and Utah? Somehow, some way, those three are going to end the Big 12. Am I wrong to assume that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think it's trending that way. You know, there may be some logistical hurdles, you know, that they're going through right now, Arizona with the Board of Regents, with both them and Arizona State. And then I would imagine they all want to do this together. And so maybe Utah, like, hey, give us a few more hours. Let's get ourselves together. And then we'll all, you know, file formal application and then you'll be accepted and then you'll go. You know, for the Big 12, given the situation that they were in, this is all successful for them. You know, this is, again, you saved yourself from imminent demise 2 years ago. You made four good additions that are starting this year, and now you've added four more that you targeted, that you set out. This was our goal. We're going to go get them, and they did. I mean, Brett Yormark, a bit merciless, a bit, you know, bottom-line oriented. He ain't having any of the high-minded rhetoric about, you know, integrity and student-athlete welfare and blah, blah, blah. He's about, let's build the biggest, strongest conference we can. Well, they've just added four that do that. So it doesn't elevate them to an equal status with the SEC or Big Ten, but nothing was going to. But this does help your viability and your long-term strength.
If you're sitting there saying we're going to lose Texas and Oklahoma, but we added all these, that's a huge win. And let's remember,
yeah,
the Big 12 was left for dead 2 summers ago. And I'm right, Bowlesby called up Larry Scott and said, you want to merge? Right? There was a merger option.
I think it was George. George K. I think he was already there.
Oh, there was some kind of merger, right? I can't even remember all these stories. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry.
Basically,
but
turned it down.
Yeah, they said, no, we don't want to merge with you. You're not really fit with us. You know, they're bagging on Ames, huh? Don't bag on Ames. Let it be known, the curse of bagging on Ames. Be careful now. Lake Ogunbowale or whatever that thing is. What is that, lake? They're up there toasting beers to this weekend at the Pac-12's arrogance. You could have had us, and you thought you were too good sipping your wine up there in Marin County, and now look what happened. But they could have merged. Then the Pac-12 could have raided them, particularly TCU. They could have grabbed TCU and Houston or something. They could have raided, and they didn't. And 2 years later, kaboom, the Pac-12 is getting four of your members and four others are like Gilligan's Island, lost at sea. I mean, it is a turn of a fortune for the Big 12. And that's why the Big 12 fans are like, hey, man, I'm not shedding a tear for any Pac-12 dying, because they weren't shedding any tears for us.
That's right. That's right. I think it was almost exactly 2 years ago that Bowlesby and Kliakoff met, and as it was explained to me, Bowlesby basically offered the entire conference to him, and no, there were no takers. And it's amazing to think now, because then Kliakoff at that point had USC and UCLA. The Big 12 had nothing, and now look, it's just a wild swing of events.
Yeah, what a deal. Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, Big 12. If they add these teams at 16, this is going to be a wild league. I mean, it's going to be a wild and fun league to watch. It was going to be wild. Sure. Utah is really good. And I hope what I was talking about earlier, about how sometimes there's a certain magic to what you have and the mix works. I hope it continues to work for Utah, because Utah, because of just history and college football politics, were told you weren't any good when they really were.
Yeah.
I think we mentioned last show. They went 12-0 with Urban Meyer as the head coach and Alex Smith, the number one draft pick, as their quarterback. And the AP put them sixth. Yeah. And Urban's like, if we had a playoff, we were going to beat somebody. We may not have been good enough to win the title. We weren't my Florida teams, but we were good. Now, you know, Urban will say anything, but still, I'm going to take them. This time, I'm going to believe him.
I covered that team. They were really good.
They were really good, right? And TCU, same way. TCU, you're not really good. And it's like, well, now you beat Michigan in the playoff, and you made the final. Yeah, you lost, but still. No, you get these guys right. If Utah can keep that together, if that mix that works for Utah isn't, well, you're playing in California a lot, and you get a lot of good recruits out of Southern California or whatever. If that's the case, we also get the Utah BYU in the conference again together. Yeah. Oh. Right. Talk about we're back.
Yeah. That actually, like, immediately goes to the top of the rivalry charts in the new Big 12. I mean, that's a smoking hot rivalry under any circumstance. And now within the same league, you bet.
Oh, and if they're playing late in the year for for conference championship game appearance or however they're going to set this up. And I think keeping the Arizona schools together is big. You added markets. Really good by the Big 12. Really good. I think it's going to be a very good league. It's going to be a really interesting league. We'll see. We'll see if all these schools can do it. I worry about you lose that tether to California. Can Arizona State and Utah keep going? But
yeah.
And Coach Prime.
Yes, and Coach Prime. The other thing, though, too, like Kyle Whittingham is a really old school coach. He's a great coach at Utah. But he's also like he has had some fatigue with the NIL, the collective stuff.
Yeah,
this is one more new development for him, and I don't know how much longer he's going to want to go. That's, I think, the eternal kind of worry at Utah, because he has been the institutional coach there.
Okay. Let's start with the clear losers here. Yeah. Washington State, we'll put these two in, Washington State and Oregon State. What do they do?
You go to the Mountain West and say, let's get together.
Does the Pac-12 absorb Mountain West teams? Well, because like you've got all these units of basketball tournament out there. Right. You have a better brand, I guess.
The name Pac-12 resonates more. If you keep the four, if you keep Oregon State, Washington State, Cal, and Stanford, and those two are much more iffy in my opinion. But if you keep those four, you get San Diego State, you get SMU, and then you get
Boise, Fresno, Colorado Vegas. State, and Vegas.
Yeah, yeah. Then, and call it the Pac-12, fine, you know. But either way, I mean, look, if you're Oregon State and Washington State, you can't really call any shots. So you've just kind of got to hope for the dying conference brand name to outweigh whatever else is out there. But I think ultimately my bet is that they end up being in the Mountain West.
So these Oregon State and Washington State competitively is in our capable of winning a lot of games in a Mountain Westy kind of league, whatever we want to call it. Right. Yep. This actually fits better for them and all of those things. The problem they have is twofold. I mean, this is devastating. You have you've marketed your school as big time college sports, right? Pac-12, come to our school. You come here, come to a little town like Pullman or Corvallis, and you get big time college sports. That's the Mountain West just isn't the same, right?
Right.
Also, stadium constructions, facilities. Both Oregon State and Washington have poured millions and millions. They have debt service on facilities that were based on the concept they would be making $30 million a year at the Pac-12. And this new league, they'll make five. Like their schools are going to have to bail them out. Like it is, they have Pac-12 size, Power 5 size athletic departments, they're not going to have Power 5 money anymore. So for that stuff, devastation. I mean, financially, this is unbelievable development for these guys. And you pour that money in and they go, oh, wait. I mean, I think they're rebuilding Oregon State's whole stadium, right?
Yeah, right now. Riser Stadium. I mean, like the last year they played with a very small capacity because they were like redoing the whole thing. I mean, it's a monster project. So,
right.
Yeah, the amount of money that's being poured into that is daunting, I think. And I will say this, Dan. I think Oregon State could win the Pac-12 this year. And it's a good Pac-12. I think they're going to be really good if DJ Uiagalelei comes through. And wouldn't that be something if the Pac-12, the last year of the Pac-12, one of the few schools that can't go anywhere would win the league? They'll be at least in the mix. It will be very competitive.
That is worth rooting for.
Yes.
It's going to be it is going to be a great season. It was going to be a great season of the Pac-12 anyway. Now it's just blood sport. It is Hunger Games.
It's going to be so wild. So wild.
I mean, it is just everybody hates each other.
Yeah.
The four that are left behind hate Oregon and Washington, USC and UCLA. USC and Oregon hate each other. The other three hate everybody. Everybody hate. I mean, the Conference of Champions is the Conference of Hate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No.
tough for these guys, but you carry on, you win. Look, for 2 years, there's six automatic bids and there are only four conferences that are any good. There are now two spots available for the others. And the Mountain West Pac-12 conglomerate is probably the strongest league outside. So win that league and you're in the playoff. Not bad.
That's the thing. You know,
probably.
There's still a path.
There's still a path, and there should be, hopefully, this is why they should have taken the long-term deal.
I know.
God, they will kick themselves if this thing goes away. But they had a chance to lock in six automatic bids for a long period of time, and nobody wanted to do it. And they only got two. And in 2 years, they're going to redo this playoff. And if the Big Ten and SEC say, we're not having automatic bids, ain't going to be automatic bids. Because anything anybody can do with these two, they are the 800-pound gorillas of this sport, and you don't mess with them. All right. Let's go next two. There's the last two we'll do on this. Cal, or let's do Stanford. What the hell does Stanford do?
I mean, that here is the, like, the, and I've had a couple of people bring this up to me, the incredible microcosm of where we are in college athletics, that the number one academic institution that still plays big time football and the number one all sports institution in America at any level has nowhere to go. Nobody wants them. And there were people that were interested in the Big Ten in it, but the academics got squashed by the TV people, like, nah, nobody watches Stanford. We're not taking them. And the presidents, okay, if that's what you say, okay. I mean, it's astounding to me. So Stanford, look, if I were Stanford, here's what I would do. There are two options, I would say. Well, maybe there's only one. You go independent. You go your own way. You say, we are not going to be part of this warmed-over conference and this half-baked conference. And you try to get an agreement with Notre Dame. You schedule them in every single sport. You try to maybe set up a series or something that NBC sponsors. I don't know what you do, but you work the Notre Dame angle as hard as you can. And if you still want to play big-time football, I would hold open the possibility of just de-emphasizing football. Maybe go FCS, be like, you know, the Ivy Leagues or Villanova in that respect, but still try to be good at everything else. Or here's the real Hail Mary. You go to your $30 billion endowment and you say, can we have 1/60th, please, to fund our athletic programs and see if you can get them to part with 1/60th of their endowment to fund athletics. I doubt that would happen.
Best line I heard about Stanford is if they could, they should bribe the Big Ten crew coach for admission through the side door to speak Stanford's language. Wait. Isn't there a legacy sport around? Isn't there a country club sport that can get us admission to this? The fact that Stanford is denied admission is a little funny. It's a little funny now. A little bit. Oh no, our cricket players have nowhere to go.
Cricket. Listen to you. They don't play cricket. Thank you.
Oh, no, it's not cricket. Cricket's a real sport. No.
Real
sport. It's one of those paddles. I don't know.
Squash.
Squash that no one in America plays unless you at least got a 8-figure net worth. Okay, your sailing team, your co-ed sailing team, your small boat sailing team, all of your little legacy stuff. Wait, we should be able to bribe. They're going to buy the Big Ten a building and get admission. That's how they're going to do it.
Hey, they do.
They
have the money
honestly
to do it.
Could, though. This is the thing about Stanford. This is what the Big Ten, like, they're talking about, we'll take a cut rate on, or they should say, Stanford, give us $10 million a year. We'll let you in.
Right.
Sell our spot. We'll sell you a spot. You got the money. Bring it, Daddy Warbucks. You want in? Well, we're going to throw you a lifeline, but you got to pay us. I don't know if it wouldn't have been a bad deal. Anyway, I have no idea what they're going to do, but it's not great. Like, imagine this, okay? Like, literally 54 weeks from now, like, you need a women's soccer game. You need a field hockey. Yeah. Like, the season starts, and you're going, we don't have anyone to play.
Yeah.
Like, I got to build a schedule. If you're the athletic department over at Stanford, it is going to be a long working weekend. Like, you, oh, same with Cal and others, but yeah. Stanford is not going to join the Mountain West. Unlikely. No. But they are literally going, who the hell are we even playing?
Right.
Who are we playing? All right. I don't know what's going to happen to Stanford. They'll figure it out. They're smart. Cal, they don't have all the money.
No.
It's also unbelievable that the, like, fifth biggest city in the country or something market and the richest city in the country. I don't, I mean, like, what, can't be involved in major call. Like, it's so funny. Like, we got teams in Manhattan, Kansas, Iowa City, Iowa, Starkville, Mississippi, yeah. And we got nothing in the Bay Area. Like, Bay Area, yeah. What? Anybody live around here? Anyone got any money? No, nothing. What a sport.
It's incredible. Because that, like, Cal, almost as good in terms of all sports excellence as Stanford. I mean, perennially top 10, top 20 in all sports. Won a couple of national titles this year. Almost as good academically. My favorite thing and your favorite thing, Dan Wetzel, the U.S. News World Report rankings, university rankings, tied for the top state school that plays big-time sports in terms of academic prestige, Cal and UCLA. And Cal's got nothing, too. I mean, and Cal, they could go lump in with the other UC system schools, I guess, and play FCS, but, you know, and maybe do the same thing as Stanford, de-emphasize football or something. But, good Lord, that would just be insane.
I mean, they've not been great consistently on the field. This is the alma mater of Aaron Rodgers and Jared Goff. Like, 1/16th.
And Marshawn Lynch.
Yeah, Marshawn and many others. But 1/16th of your NFL starters in a month went to Cal. And they're like, yeah, we're not. There's tons of talent around there. How? I don't know. This is the sport. I don't understand. How? How has Cal ever got that bad in football to begin with? I don't know. It just did. It never should have got that.
Management. No.
I mean, you look at, like, Sonny Dykes coached there and couldn't win. He goes to SMU, wins like crazy, goes to TCU and reaches the national championship game. Like, Sonny Dykes can coach football. I think we can all agree on that. He just couldn't coach Cal football.
Right.
It was you, not me. Yeah. It was you, not me. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of institutional headwinds, as they say at Cal, towards the all-encompassing, all-in football mentality.
I have no idea. And then, like, basketball-wise, maybe you'll try to get in.
Terrible.
I don't know what they're going to do. This is unbelievably shocking for these schools. Cal doesn't have the money. Stanford does. Who knows? Absolutely wild times. All right, one last one briefly. SEC seems 100% content, as we mentioned. They're just sitting there. We got Texas and Oklahoma. We're all our schools make sense. Like, the biggest outlier we have is maybe Oklahoma. It's kind of Great Plains, when not pure South. But then again, you've been to Norman. It's pretty South. Wind keeps sweeping down the plains, but whatever. They're happy. They got all the money. The league makes sense. They're not adding Oregon, Washington, Texas, Oklahoma. They're admiring all their national championships, and they're going, we're going to wait. We're not, Florida State and Clemson are hoping they can get somebody. I don't know if they're going to take those guys. I think they'd be more interested in Notre Dame and North Carolina if they could get them.
Absolutely. Or North Carolina and Virginia even.
Yeah. I don't know. And that leads us to FSU, who we discussed the last time. One thing that slipped past me the last time, their president said they averaged 3.2 million viewers every game last year. Or that's their average. I don't know where they came up with that number. That is extremely high and does not. If he's got numbers that suggest that, he should. Somebody send them to me. But I looked at the rate. I did not have time to do the average. But like their Florida game got over 6 million. Maybe peaked at 7, but that was it. 3.2 is a really big number. I don't know that FSU is as good of a TV draw as you might think. It's a nice football brand. They've done a great job with that program, but I don't know what if their options are quite as good. They're talking about adding private equity to help. What do you sell part of the team? Like, what is this? Like,
lost in all of the hoopla today was, they're like talking to JP Morgan Chase about, like
smart. Come on, you got to come up with something.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the thing. If you feel like you're stuck in a deal and you want to raise money, enough money to break a deal. But I mean, you want to talk about what would be egregious financial activities to raise money to pay like a $500 million buyout to get out of the ACC. Come on. Come on.
It's a considerable loan. It's a considerable loan. I don't know.
And that's another thing. I mean, in making a lot of calls about what the ACC was trying to do with the Pac-12, one of the things I kept hearing from ACC people is, can you believe what Florida State's trying to do? Like, everybody was like blown away. Like, what in the hell are they doing in Tallahassee?
Well, God bless them. All right. That is our realignment part. We'll be back on Monday to do more. I do have one story because this is very important. We don't want our listeners, in danger. We talked about this otter in Santa Cruz who's stealing surfboards.
Oh, yeah. Otter 841.
Yes. Well, there's another otter causing acting up. There's something going on with the otters. Billings, Montana, a rare attack by a river otter in southern Montana injured three women floating on inner tubes and inflicted wounds serious enough that one victim had to be airlifted to the hospital. At least one otter swam up on the adult women at 8:15 Wednesday and attacked them. The women were able to get to shore and call 911.
Man.
What is happening with the otters, Pat?
Well, remember 841 hadn't been seen for a while?
Oh, maybe he swam over?
Maybe he would relocate it, you know? Like
long swim.
It's a long swim. Maybe he caught a bus or something, you know, for part of the way. And I mean, Montana's a long way from Santa Cruz, California, that's for sure. But unless I want to see some physical IDs on this one and see if he matches 841.
Well,
suspect it's the same otter.
There's an otter hunt in Montana going on right now, and I have seen Yellowstone. They're probably going to get him. So,
They aren't going to handle a dangerous otter the same way in Montana as they do in Santa Cruz.
No, Santa Cruz, they got T-shirts and a free the otter. No, they're going to finish this otter off really quick in Billings. But anyway,
the river otters are much more dangerous than the sea otters, I believe. It's kind of like a badger and a honey badger. Really? River otters.
How the hell do you know that? How do you know that?
Comparison. Sea otters are a little more fluffy, and you see the videos of them holding the stones. And the river otters, you know, they're catching snakes out of the river. They're eating fish. They're a little more gnarly.
Okay. Sean Anderson.
Fluffy versus gnarly. There we go.
Producer extraordinaire, otter expert. So, all right, good deal. That's what we got. So if you see an otter, get the hell out of the way. Go the other way. All right. Other than that, enjoy your weekend. Thank you for listening to all the pods this week. We had a huge week of listenership. If you're new, stick with us. Subscribe. Hit the subscribe button. Tell your friends about us. We try to do our best. Have fun. And it's free, as I noted. So we thank you very much for all that. Have a good weekend, unless you're an otter. Talk to you later.